So, jetzt ist es mir eine Ehre und Freude, die beiden letzten Redner unserer Tagung vorzustellen, bevor dann die Public Lecture den Abend einen Höhepunkt darstellt. Das ist also zunächst Frau Zalambuni, Professor für Neues Testament an der Theologischen Fakultät der Aristoteles-Universität Saloniki. Sie ist also Expertin, die Expertin für Makedonien in Zeit des Neuen Testaments und hat eine Monographie geschrieben über das Thema I Makedonia, Stile Bochitis, Kinis, Priapikis. Was noch für uns wichtig ist, ist ihr gutes Verhältnis in enger Zusammenhang mit Panderis Nikdelis von der Sowjetunion, von dem wir das Supplement zu dem Korpus von Thessaloniki erwarten. Das heißt, ich kenne es schon und weiß, dass da also auch gut etwa 40, 50 christliche Inschriften drin sein werden. Und er versprach, dieses Supplement im nächsten Jahr abzuliefern. Sie haben das Wort.
Thank you very much for your kind words, and thank you very much for the invitation. It has been a fascinating conference. I've learned a lot. Thank you for your kind words, but I'm not an expert. I'm an amateur. I'm just trying to understand things, as everybody here does, the same thing. Well, as long as there is the city of Thessaloniki, no one can feel without a hometown. This is a famous and often quoted aphorism coming from the speech of a Thessalonian orator at the beginning of the 14th century, Nikephoros Humnos, and I hope that you come to Thessaloniki and we can prove you that this is saying is true. Although it is a rather late text, it can be regarded as a testimony of the city's urbane character and of the presence and settlement of foreigners in the city through the ages. Indeed, the history and the nature of Thessaloniki, a harbour city founded by Cassander in the 4th century BCE, by transporting the inhabitants of 26 smaller villages around the Gulf of Thermaicus, has contributed to its becoming a cosmopolitan centre and an important trade, crossroad and meeting place of different cultures. The literary and especially the epigraphic evidence from the Hellenistic and Roman period attest the presence of individuals or groups from other cities and regions of the ancient world who visited, lived, and died in Thessaloniki. According to these testimonies, these foreigners came from neighboring regions, like, for example, Edessa or Cassandra in Chalkidiki, from Upper Macedonia, for example, Dasavitis or Heraclea Linkistis, from Thracia, from central and southern Greece, like Corinth, Sparta, Crete, and mainly from Asia Minor, for example, Nicaea, Nicomedia of Bithynia, Amastris of Pontus, Thyatira, Attalia, or Corycus of Cilicia. The main bulk of them were sailors and merchants. However, the inscriptions from the city also attest the presence of non-Thessalonians of other professions, like actors, athletes, gladiators, philosophers, or Roman officials. According to the epigraphic evidence, it seems that the major group of non-Greeks must have been Italian merchants or bankers and members of their households, whose presence in the city has been attested since the end of the 1st century BCE. During the 1st and 2nd century CE, they formed a discernible body with an active participation in the city's life. Regarding the history of the early Christian community of the city and another group, that of the Jews of the city, is of particular interest. According to the Acts, during the second half of the first century, their community was numerous and important enough to cause an agitation in the city that led to Paul's hurried departure. Interestingly, the archaeological and epigraphic evidence of the Jewish presence in Thessaloniki comes from later times, mainly from the 3rd century onwards, with the exception of a probable piece of evidence coming from the second half of the 2nd century CE that I'm going to present later. This can be due to circumstantial factors, or more probably because Jews, like other groups, seem to have followed the dominant epigraphic habit of the eastern part of the Greco-Roman world, a sign of their adjustment to the local communities they settled in. Only some hints in the inscribed texts, for example names or a particular vocabulary, indicate their probable Jewish origin, a phenomenon that can also be attested in the case of other ethnic groups in Thessaloniki that had a long history of presence in the city. In this paper, the presence of foreign groups in Thessaloniki, and especially their integration and social networking, will be briefly discussed. This particular aspect of the city life, not much considered in the studies of the social history of Roman Thessaloniki, could contribute to the reconstruction of the social context of the early Christian community of the city and lead as well to interesting conclusions regarding the mechanisms of assimilation or the types of networking that these groups developed. Christianity was a religion introduced by foreigners and was thus a foreign cult, at least from the perspective of the Gentile inhabitants of the city. On the other hand, in 1 Thessalonians, Paul refers to the negative response of the Christians, co-citizens to the new religion, while at the same time he seems to suggest a new identity of the Thessalonian Christians by constructing a network that includes the other congregations of Macedonia and Achaia, Thessalonians 1:7-8, as well as those of Judea, 1 Thessalonians 2:14. It could be claimed that by stressing the existence of a different point of reference outside the local community, Paul seems to presuppose a procedure rather different from those employed by various groups of foreigners in the city. The validity of this first impression will be tested briefly in the last part of this paper. In the first part of the paper, epigraphic material from the city regarding foreigners will be discussed by making use of the insights of the network and social identity theories. The discussion will focus on different aspects of assimilation and networking of these foreigners and investigate the domains of public or private life where this integration becomes more evident. For methodological reasons, the main body of inscriptions discussed here will come from the 1st to the 3rd century CE, whereas evidence from earlier or later times will also be referred to in order to support the arguments presented here. In the last part of the presentation, the significance of the conclusions drawn for understanding the situation of the early Christian community of the city will be examined. And first, allow me to discuss some things about networks and groups. According to the network theory, people can come together and build up a network for two main reasons. A, propinquity, and B, an individual level of homophily, namely status homophily, either ascribed, for example, age, race, sex, or acquired, for example, education or profession. And a value homophily, namely sharing a common ideological ground. Two different tendencies can be detected when individuals or collectivities, or in the language of theory, network theory, nodes, come together. Common norms or values may bring nodes with common attributes together, or common attributes may lead to common norms. In other words, the following possibilities can be detected. A, the same kind of people come together. B, people influence each other and in the process they become alike. C, people can end up in the same place. And D, once they are in the same place, the very place influences them to become alike. So you can see it's a very complex situation. Therefore, both self-awareness and distinctiveness, as well as a tendency to embeddedness, can be detected. Certainly, the ties of reciprocity and mutuality both play an important role in networking, as well as the similarity between the nodes. The greater this similarity is, the more intensive the flow between them will be. The networks built up by individual and collectivities can either be egocentric, where all nodes in the network are connected to a single node, but not to each other, so everybody knows one, and that's the egocentric network, sociocentric, where the network operates in a closed system, or in the box, as we say, and open system ones, where the boundaries of each network are not clear, and the various nodes of a network are also connected to other nodes, creating other networks too. In this paper, it is claimed that the networks of foreigners in Thessaloniki fall under the third category. Although some of them operate like distinct groups in the city life, they cannot be regarded as closed systems, since their members also participate in other groups and connect themselves with others outside their original network, thus creating a matrix of networks. In the network analysis, various aspects of connecting are also taken into consideration. For example, density, distribution, structural holes, weak ties, popularity and centrality, multiplexity, the interpersonal environment, and finally, the position or roles of the various nodes. When discussing epigraphic data, though, it is not always easy to explore all these aspects adequately, since in many cases, pieces of the puzzle are missing. For the same reason, statistics or mathematical calculations of density or distribution can be misleading, and therefore will be avoided in this paper. Furthermore, the focus will be more on the reasons that lead particular individuals in the city to build up networks, the forms these networks take, and finally, the ways the various nodes of particular networks connect themselves to nodes outside their network. So that was this that I'm... The network now of Romans in Thessaloniki. Apart from soldiers or Roman officials that reside in Thessaloniki temporarily and for military and administrative reasons, various other individuals with Roman tria nomina or Roman nomina and prenomina, but Greek cognomina, are attested in the inscriptions of the city since the first century BCE. They are mainly traders and bankers that arrived in Greece and Asia Minor during this period and established their agencies in various cities of the eastern part of the empire. In Thessaloniki, individual members of this group appear in various inscriptions mainly related to the cult of the Egyptian deities, in the very first period. Their preference to this deity is probably due to the common origin of both the cult and themselves from the island of Delos. And I have an example here, the example of Poplius Salarius Pamphilus and his son, Poplius Salarius Manius, who dedicated a temple and a peristyle, so you can see here Osirion and Peristylon. So we assume that it was a small temple within a peristyle. Well, at least that's what the epigraphers assume. And to the other deities, so it's not just Osiris, but also the other deities, and this here, Tis, Alis, Theis, Tis, and Temenis. Apologize for my non-Erasmian pronunciation. Unfortunately, it's too difficult for me to speak Erasmian. So you can see that there were also other deities, and they were all venerated in the same temple. So this is one of the very early cases of Romans making dedication to the city. However, what is more important is the appearance of an organized group bearing the name Sympragmatevomenoi Romaioi, so which along with the city has monuments erected in the agora of the city to honor the emperor. I've got here an example. So we've got a group of Romans. They present themselves as a particular and very distinct group. And together with the city, they venerated. Here we've got just a catalog without the dedication, but we've got another inscription here where you can see that according to the restoration of the inscription, they dedicated to the Caesar, so to the emperor. It is clear that a network of Roman traders who reside in Thessaloniki was formed on the basis of the common interests and common ideals, so they present themselves as Romans. The same reasons seem to have led this Roman network to build up connections with another network, namely that of the native citizens of Thessaloniki. The political motivation and intentions of these common public acts of dedication, I think it's evident. This is also made clear by the fact that the agora, the main public space of the city, is selected for the expressions of loyalty. From the perspective of networking, though, it is interesting to know the fact that in these early phases, Romans do not seem to attain particular offices in the local administrative bodies, for example, in the body of politarchs, a situation that changes, however, during the second century CE. In these public dedications and acts, they seem to act as a distinct body. This, however, should not lead to the conclusion that the Romans of Thessaloniki are a closed network. In simple words, on the contrary, individual nodes of this network build up connections with other nodes in the city networks, with other individuals, I mean. In simple words, mixed marriages take place, Romans become partners with citizens of Thessaloniki or from formed with Thessalonians and other foreigners, cult and trade associations. The interconnections of the nodes of these two could therefore be depicted as a complex matrix of reciprocal and mutual ties, not always symmetric or of the same strength. In my opinion, this variety and multiplexity can also be detected in the inscriptions of the city, where I can see the following tendencies. A, Romans with common profession interests built up a network with Peregrini, for example, a trade cult association. B, Romans associate with other citizens within already existing networks. And C, Romans, Peregrini and Thessalonian citizens built up their own network. Admittedly, it's not always easy to discern the different types of networking. Furthermore, it is not important from the perspective of the end result, namely the creation of the network. It can, however, be of significance when one studies the networking procedure and could also provide interesting information about the assimilation process and dynamics within a society and across networks. Two examples can illustrate the complexity of and dynamics of these networks. The first one is a funeral inscription, probably placed on the cenotaph of a dead salesman, whose name was Athenion Praxitelus, from Amastris of Pontos. You can see that, yes, yeah, Amastrianon. By an association under the protection of Aphrodite Epitefxidia, the name is here. So, the Aphrodite who brings success in trade. According to the first publisher of the inscription, Emmanuel Vutiras, this is a cult and trade association of seafarers and merchants from Asia Minor, but also from Thessaloniki. The owner deceased, who died away from the city, this Exon Teleftisanda, probably while on the sea, bears a Greek type name and comes from Amastris. The designation of the association as a Dumos is Phrygian or Lydian and is also attested in Lydia. One could probably assume the Asian provenance of those who founded this association. At the same time, though, two of the main officers of the Dumos, the Archisynagogos, you can see here, and the secretary are occupied by persons who bear Roman names. You can see the trianomina here, Laios Autronios Liberos, and the secretary here, Koindos Pupius Castor. So we've got two Roman types names. The third officer of the association, the Exetastes, is a Peregrinus, although it is not easy to establish his geographical origins. The association of Aphrodite Epitefxidia is an interesting example of a network comprised by individuals who also belong to other networks and come along to build their own matrix of connections on the basis of common professional interests. The second example is the cult association of Theos Ipsistos in Thessaloniki. I apologize for the very small letters. Unfortunately, it's a very long inscription, the one that I chose with the names, but it's a very interesting one, so easily accessible. Eight inscriptions have already come to light, all bearing dedications to Theos Ipsistos. Seven of them were found proper Serapeum, according to Edson, Charles Edson, that is near the temple of the Egyptian deities. Actually, it is the southwestern part of the town district known today as the Diikiterion, so where actually is there used to be the municipality building, where in antiquity all major sanctuaries of the city were located. The inscription published by Pantelis Nigdalis was found, according to the museum inventory, in the ancient agora, but it is assumed that it came from the same archaeological site as the previous one, so all of them came from the same area. All monuments are dated from the second half up to the end of the first century or the beginning of the second century CE. Due to the time limits of this presentation, the significance of this aniconic cult and its possible relevance to the Jewish community of Thessaloniki cannot be discussed here. We will only focus on the prosopographical analysis of the names of the Hypsistos worshippers, the Synclite Theou Hypsistou. Well, this is a group that actually has a common meal as, let's say, the main feature of their coming together, which can provide some very useful information regarding their origin and social status. In the inscriptions, 64 names of people, men and women, connected somehow with the Hypsistos cult are preserved. The majority of them belong to the Roman type, that is, the tria nomina, an indication of the Roman status of their bearers. With the exception of one, the rest belong to the Greek two-name system, an indication of their free status. Regarding the group of the Roman names, they could be subdivided in three categories. First, names containing the gentilicium of a Roman emperor, of the Julio-Claudian or Flavian dynasty. B, gentilicia of people who served as Roman officials in the province of Macedonia. And C, gentilicia of Italian families that have been active as bankers or merchants in the eastern part of the Roman Empire, as we have already discussed. The cognomina, that is the third part of these three Roman type names, provide us also with useful information. The majority of them are not Roman, an indication that these people who wore them were not Roman by birth, but A, were free Greek citizens who acquired the Roman citizenship by an emperor or an important Roman, and B, were freedmen or descendants of freedmen of Italian families of merchants and traders and bankers. On the other hand, the Greek type names can also be very helpful. With the exception of one that stands without the name of the father, all indicate the free status of their bearers. Four of them mention the name of the mother instead of that of the father, which is a feature that we find, the metronymic found in Macedonia, and there are many different hypotheses why this happens, and belong to a lower social stratum. In two cases, the place of origin is also mentioned, a person coming from Thessaloniki and one coming from Corinth. This brief analysis of the prosopographical data of the Hypsistos inscription leads to the conclusion that that the participants of the Theos Hypsistos cult do not belong to a particular ethnic or social group. An egalitarian tendency should also be detected here. No hierarchical differentiation based on their social status seems to have existed. But Roman citizens, freedmen, children of mixed marriages, and Greeks are listed with no discrimination. Their names can also denote their social and geographical mobility, a factor that played an important role in the diffusion of Christianity too. Furthermore, from the perspective of the network theory, the association of Theos Hypsistos is an example of an open system network, since its members belong to other networks as well. This possibility is implied by their social and ethnic origins, as well as by the proximity of this cult to the one of the Egyptian cults. So it is many times suggested that this cult was somehow associated to the cult of the Egyptian deities. Unfortunately, due to the scarcity and fragmentary character of the epigraphic material from Thessaloniki, no concrete prosopographical connection has been established so far between this group and other groups in the city. In both epigraphic cases, it is clear that people of the same interest, for example, professional religious, come together since they also end up in the same place. However, this place influences them to become alike. Although they retain some of their particular features, for example, the name of the association, Dumus, for example, we saw in the previous example, they exhibit a clear tendency to assimilate to their social and cultural environment, for example, the adherence to a deity that in this case is not Roman. And another example, the case of Asiani. The Romans, however, not the only foreigners who connected themselves in networks similar to the above described. The Asiani, namely traders organized in association venerating Dionysos, seem to be a similar case. According to Christoph Steimle, who follows here Pantelis Nikdelis, the Asiani were merchants coming originally from Asia Minor, who founded similar associations in other places, cities of the Balkans as well, for example, Heraclea, Perinthos, in some places in Bulgaria, and even includes Napoca. It is possible that very soon after their settlement and the establishment of their network, local citizens were also integrated in these associations, thus creating new bonds and connections with the local community. This seems to be the case in Thessaloniki, as the names of the members involved indicate. Furthermore, what makes the Asiani an interesting case in the present discussion is the fact that they could be regarded as a kind of association network with ties beyond the local communities, because we said that there were ASEANI associations in other places as well. The common feature of the ASEANI, name, type of cult, and the common deity could be an indication that this is the case, so that we have, let's say, something that goes beyond the local community. And the last case is the Jewish case. How about the Jews now? The Jews could also be regarded as a similar supra-regional group, since their presence can be attested in almost all the major cities of the Roman Empire. The epigraphic evidence of their presence in the city is rather late and scarce in the, let's say, the latest edition of the inscriptions, Jewish inscriptions from Macedonia. Only 6 inscriptions are published, the famous Samaritan one included, all dated in the 3rd or 4th century CE. To the inscriptions previously published, 2 more that are probably Jewish were extensively discussed in Igles' publication of Thessalonian Epigraphy in 2006. And since this is published in Greek, I decided to present you the 2 inscriptions so that you have just an idea what's going on. Based on the letter from the second one, this one, Cornelius Simon and so on, is dated in the second half of the 2nd century CE. And that's really important because we don't have that early inscriptions from Thessaloniki of Jewish origin. So if the dating is right, then it's a very interesting finding. And if, of course, it's a Jewish inscription as well, because here we have to discuss a lot about that. As in the previous cases, these 2 inscriptions were identified as Jewish because of the presence of possible Jewish names on them, Savatius in the first inscription and Simon and Maria in the second. What makes the Jewish provenance probable, because the names, to tell the truth, are a little bit debatable, is the fact that they were found in the same area of the Eastern Cemetery of Thessaloniki, where the rest of the Jewish inscriptions come from, that is, underneath the administration building of the university campus in Thessaloniki. On the other hand, both of them do not alter the general idea about the Jewish settlement of the city. All Jews of Thessaloniki adopt Greek names, or Greek types of their Jewish names, as well as they also assimilate to the epigraphic habit of the environment. The sarcophagus of Marcus Aurelius Iacov, this one, who also bore the name Eftichios, so he has a Jewish name, actually he has a Roman name with a Jewish cognomen and supranomen that's Greek, indicates the interconnection of the network of the Jewish community, the reference to the synagogue of the city. Here you see that if you, there is a fine that has to be paid to the synagogues of the city. And I think here there is a connection between the synagogues and the city itself. For example, my question is, who is going to take care that the fine will be paid? Will it be the synagogues? Will it be the city? So it's a public and also monument and so on. However, the nature of their connection is not quite clear from the inscription. What could, however, assume from the silence of our sources that the Thessalonian Jews prefer to remain rather inconspicuous, probably adopting the customs of, or even names of their environment. And as a conclusion now, I'm coming to my previous question. The selected epigraphic examples demonstrate the fact that the foreigners of the city created their own networks in many cases, but at the same time they were willing to build up connections with members of other networks in Thessaloniki, thus creating new forms of small worlds, as we say that in the network theory, and interpersonal environments. Returning to First Thessalonians, it seems evident that Paul employs a rhetoric of segregation of the Christian group from its environment, and that at the same time he attempts to create a network of Christians that goes beyond the local society. However, the cases from Thessaloniki that were discussed previously have led to the conclusion that this was not always the case with such supra-regional networks, and that the members of them could at the same time retain their particularity as well as demonstrate their willingness to be part of the local communities. The silence of the epigraphic monuments regarding the presence of Christians in the city before the 3rd century could not be necessarily interpreted as a definite lack of evidence. Based on the previous discussion, one could claim that it is highly probable that the Christians of the 1st and 2nd century were reluctant to demonstrate publicly their Christian identity. for reasons that we have perhaps to discuss, and that they probably prefer to use their previous ways of self-representation. The probability that some of them came either from the Romanized urban layers of the city or were even foreigners makes this hypothesis possible, although not certain. This surely does not mean that Paul's words of advice went amiss in Thessaloniki. The testimony of Second Thessalonians, if of course its Macedonian provenance is attested, seems to indicate that at some point the Thessalonian congregation adopted a different attitude towards its environment, retrieving in more closed system network. Admittedly, while all this remains in the realms of hypothesis, according to Yogi Berra, perhaps you know him, he has recently died, he was famous for his tautologies, you can observe a lot by watching, he said. Certainly, different interpretations depend on who is watching and from what perspective. Therefore, and this is the concluding cautious statement of this paper, so my perspective, models like this created by network or identity theory could probably provide alternative ways of approaching not only the eloquence, but also the silence of the sources. Thank you very much.